mics are live.
Good morning. This is a work session. First of all, it's 10:34 a.m. on April 18, 2018. This is a work session on case number PU-11-69, Meadowlark Wind 1's application for a certificate of site compatibility, which was approved a long time ago, but this would be some questions that they have on it. I'm Randy Christman, Chairman of the Commission. With me are Commissioners Brian Krasius and Julie Fedorchek. I don't have any opening comments. Do either of you?
I do not.
I do not either.
Okay, so we had an informal hearing on this. I don't recall the date exactly, but a few weeks ago, asked some questions for some follow-up information. In my mind, the question from the company revolved around our discussion of whether they needed to remove all of the topsoil or just handle as the certificate, in the way that the certificate requires, the specific topsoil that they do segregate. And so that is really one question. Is our handling requirements, is that only in place for what they segregate, or are they supposed to segregate it all and handle it in that way? In the discussion, a couple other things came up that I certainly have concerns about, and those include just going through to get the exact term that they used. The company used. They put, when they pick up the topsoil, they lay a cement stabilized subgrade. And so the part of the discussion was whether that then can be left in reclamation and just mixed down into the topsoil and covered with, mixed down into the subsoil, I mean, and just covered with topsoil, or whether that also needs to be removed. And then lastly, the discussion of the low profile topsoil storage, where they essentially are spreading it out on the edges of the road, reseeding it, and with someday the anticipation of coming back and picking up a few inches of that and bringing it back. So that's, as I recall, kind of three things that left me with questions. Do either of you have anything else to add to that?
I do not.
Okay. So, I will say, and now I'm, Meadowlark sent out some information and answered a couple of the questions that I have in the first couple pages, but there are dozens and dozens of pages of fine print material here that arrived I don't know what time, but yesterday after normal work hours, and I was in New Rockford last night, so I didn't see any of this till this morning. So I just have to confess, I've only read the first couple pages of this. And so I don't know if evidence is in here that would change my mind. But I'm just going to say this. To me, all topsoil that is of a good quality, there is that one, I don't remember what the term is for it, that kind of muddy, mucky, black stuff that you run into in valleys or along creek edges that the mines, too, are just able to dispose of. But normal topsoil, to me, it all is a extraordinarily valuable resource, and every bit of it should be saved is what I hope that we require. My understanding of past history, and I will say this, I've said for years that the PSC specifically and the state of North Dakota in general ought to take the lessons that we have learned from running coal mine reclamation over the course of decades and use that knowledge to make sure we build an equally effective wind farm reclamation program. And my understanding from way back when low-profile topsoil storage has been used, it's been deemed relatively unsuccessful because you end up having a large area to try and peel a little bit back off of someday. And every time you're working all that area, some is lost, there's more compaction issues. And so my own opinion is that when we segregate this topsoil, it ought to be stored in a pile. Or at the very least, spread thicker in areas that are going to have to be reclaimed anyway. To just do it on the sides of the roads, if not for that, they don't have to be addressed then later, probably. And lastly, with regard to this cement-based mixture on the third page of this handout, it has the various components of it, primarily lime and silica. And I really don't see anything in there that on its own would, sterilize the soil or anything like that. But if we want good reclamation, I really can't see why we would allow that to be mixed into the subsoil either. I don't see anything beneficial about having it in there, and I don't think too many egg producers would welcome someone to come and dump this in the fields.
And did you say into the subsoil or into the topsoil?
Into the subsoil.
But you're saying that even if they scrape this, even if they take off all the topsoil, you still don't want to allow this to be on the next adjacent to the subsoil?
Not permanently.
Okay. Well, when they took the roads out, I know that some of it, are you saying because it disintegrates, then they just leave it?
Their suggestion, as I understood it, was you'd take the topsoil out, lay this base of this stabilizing mixture, and then when it's time to reclaim the road, this would be mixed down into the subsoil and some topsoil put over the top of it. I really think this ought to be removed as well as the top aggregate surface is going to be removed, and then put the topsoil back on subsoil again, not on this stuff. Now maybe there's some evidence in here that this is somehow beneficial or at least not harmful, but I just am not a fan, based on not having read all this, of allowing that to be left.
I have been through this. I mean, obviously not with a fine-tooth comb, but enough to, I think, understand it. And I could summarize it for you if you'd like.
Sure.
Yeah, please.
Okay. They provided three major pieces of information. One was just what was the acreage disturbances per turbine, and that was in their part one there. Mm-hmm. And so that's pretty straightforward, I think. the next one, part two, they talk about the subgrade stabilization, and what they would do is they would go down about 4 inches and then put this stabilization down. So if there was 4 inches, if there was more than that of topsoil, then they would put this right on the topsoil that was left. So what this is it's a 6%. It's going to be 6% in the topsoil, so that 94% of this mixture is still topsoil. So of that 6%, then the 60 to 67% is lime, and 17 to 25% is sand, silica sand, and so then the rest of these elements are more smaller amounts, trace elements. But then they provided us a description of the process they use, where you'd see that it only goes down the 4 inches, and they leave the, if there's that much topsoil, they leave more, whatever's left under there. And then they go on to show you some studies that show that calcium is fertilizer for soil. It's good for the soil. And it gives a bunch of scientific biological discussion of cell division and things like that that really is beyond our expertise. But it concludes basically that calcium is an essential component, fertilizer component for the soil. And so that was 60 to 67% calcium of this 6% grade that they go in, that they leave down. On the very end of that first section, there's an article that they got from Farm Show or something. I don't know a lot about it, but it says cement dust fertilizer achieves amazing results. And it talks about a product, cement kiln dust, calcium and other trace minerals contained in CKD are important to plant nutrition and productivity. And it talks about increases in the productivity that they've gained from the soil from this going in there. And then it talks about, the rest of this talks about information for piling the soil if you're storing it, as opposed to, say, spreading it out and getting some planting in it. This is an old article. There's one from NDSU, back when they were the Dirt College or whatever, the Agricultural College Survey of North Dakota.
And they still are.
Easy. Let's, easy over there.
Let's be honest.
I opened myself up for that, didn't I?
Some things never change.
But anyway, they throw those reports in, and one part of it, it talks about topsoil management. I'll like read you one sentence out of it or something. It says, sandium dot 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 in 1983, however, indicated that systematic handling and storage practice can protect the physical and chemical characteristics of topsoil. This article here, I'm sorry, is past the NDSU article. It's in the next article, and it's on coal mine reclamation. And I'm on like page 12, section 3.6. And it might take you a couple seconds to find it if you're looking on it, but chemical characteristics of topsoil while in storage and also after it has been redistributed into the regarded areas. Ghost in 2005 advised to avoid topsoil storage, especially in long term, for a time length by which the mine spoil cannot maintain its sustainability for suitable plant growth without biological reclamation and also maintenance of growth of aerobic bacteria. It says the following steps are, however, need to be followed for keeping the soil in good condition if storage is unavoidable. And so it's kind of implying that you're better off if you can spread that topsoil over a larger area and have a root growth into it for the time that it's being stored rather than a pile where it doesn't get aerated and it decomposes. And it, you can read more on this, but it talks about how your reclamation is more successful if you could avoid that kind of a storage. I think in mines, you're moving a large amount of topsoil and there's no place to spread it, and it's kind of a practical thing. But I let Dean speak to that. It's the first time I've brought it up to him, so I hate to just drop that on him. But
Jerry, I'm going to jump in on a couple of things, just my own, just to make sure I'm keeping things straight. So I'll bounce around a little bit, but the let's just call it supporting documentation from Farm Show, the Farm Show publication.
Yeah, that was a little article that was printed.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't necessarily call that an article. Okay. I'm very familiar with that publication.
Okay.
It's an advertorial-based publication.
Okay.
Where you can essentially submit your press release on why your product is really good.
Okay.
And you're trying to sell product through the advertorial process. I think that's really important. That I'm not saying it isn't credible.
I don't see that one.
We were at the end of the part one. There was one page of ads. I guess you'd call it that.
What's the name of the article that's from the Farm Show one?
It says cement dust fertilizer achieves amazing results.
I'll fire you anyway. Okay.
In the bottom corner, yeah. It says Farm Show 41. Is that the one?
Okay. Yeah, Julie, I think you just went by it.
And looking at it with what Brian just said, I think it makes sense.
Yeah, I just want to point that out. I'm not saying the information is necessarily inaccurate, but I think we have to know from that source what we're dealing with, just so everyone's aware. The second part that keeps coming back to me in all of this is, I mean, ag is very high-tech right now, and we're talking about, well, calcium's good for the soil, this is good for the soil, that's good for the soil. This seems like a broad brush, you know, one size fits all, regardless of the terrain. There's no variable rate application involved in this whatsoever, so I think that's really generous to say that this is just flat out good across the board, because I know we go out and we soil test in not just one spot on the field, but many different spots on the field. And then you come up with the right mix, if you will, so you're balancing pH appropriately. Some areas need more of this, less of that, and then vice versa, whether it's a hilltop, whether it's a valley, things change. So I don't know the answer to that, other than I would really have to take a much closer look. And with this just coming in, I simply haven't had the time to.
Brian, is your question whether you're questioning whether the calcium in the cement mixture is good for the soil in all locations?
Right, right. Yeah, and I don't know the answer to that, other than boy, we I mean, I know ag producers everywhere are just painstaking there, you know, in terms of variable rate application. And part of it's a cost. You know, you don't want too much of a good thing. Sometimes you're just wasting money. It doesn't hurt the soil. Yeah. Sometimes you are hurting the soil.
But how would we apply that here? On, you know, because we do need a determination of whether this is going to be allowed on all the roads or not.
Well, this is,
say you can use it this and that. I mean, it's,
I think it goes back to Randy's point, and that is, do you strip it all? Does it go on subsoil versus mixing it with topsoil, and then do you strip it all? And I don't know, but I have to have that question answered, or I can't.
You have to have what question answered?
If this is beneficial to soil health, or if it's could potentially be detrimental in parts of the field.
Okay.
Going with a.
Where do we get that answer?
I don't know.
What if it is that it's good 80% of the time and 20% of the time it's not, or, you know?
Yeah, I guess what keeps coming back to my mind is an NDSU soil expert. Not that they would have to be from NDSU, but that is our.
They're good with dirt.
Ag school. They're good with dirt. Very good with dirt. I just need the question answered. I'm not being critical of the approach, saying, well, it's just completely wrong. I don't know, but it begs the question for me.
Can I get this basic question answered? Is there a difference between the calcium that this article talks about, Ca2, and lime that's in this component, CaO?
The Ca2 is an ion form of calcium, and if it was by itself, I don't know, if you know a little chemistry, it would have a positive 2 charge, and it would be attracted to oxygen, which has a negative charge, a negative 2 charge, and so you get the chemical formula calcium oxide, which is lime. And calcium by itself is going to, because it's an ion like that, it's going to be attracted to anions. You get positive charge and negative charge ions, and they just attract together. So when they break down into the soil, you'd expect that there'd be some calcium splitting up. But the article is all about calcium, and you get the calcium from the lime. But I'm not an expert in these areas at all.
Dean, did you have any thoughts on that?
If you're familiar with soils, eastern United States has acidic soils, western United States has alkaline soils. We're on the alkaline side. We have plenty of calcium in our soils. In the east, you've heard of liming soils, and that's basically what they're doing, where they add lime to raise the pH of the soil. Large quantities. We don't need that practice here because our soils are naturally alkaline, on the neutral to. We have plenty of calcium in our soils. It's
more than enough.
Yeah.
So who did this study that was referenced on about the fifth page that on calcium? Is that from someone?
It looks like it's out of a scientific journal or scientific book. The one in the Farm Show publication, it references Missouri. Missouri would have acidic soils, and they would lime there.
Well, if I am scrolling through the pages and not missing something, I see that what appears to be the author, I think, is the end of the same one, is Peter Hepler from the University of Massachusetts. So you would expect in Massachusetts calcium would be more of a positive than here.
Yeah. The acidic type soils.
Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of focused on the whole road construction technique that has been cited as this is Kautzdan. This is the standard way of doing it. I'm assuming that's true. I mean, I have no reason to believe that they're suggesting that DOT and others that do a lot of roads, they've said that this is how they do it. And so I don't have any reason to question that information, but I'd be curious if others do. And so does that provide any guide here, or is it irrelevant because we're assuming, unlike DOT roads that are probably going to be there for a really long time, if not forever, that these roads are going to be reclaimed? Is that the reason for not allowing what has been described to us as a standard practice for road construction?
I guess my thought is I don't know that there's reclamation plans for, like, highways and such. They're pretty much built to be permanent. And I don't know of anything that that there is a plan to leave anything but the original topsoil and subsoil when, you know, if there's a new route change or something like that and land is reverted back to ag purposes. I don't know what the DOT does about that, what their reclamation practice is. I just find it hard to believe that overall it is, there's good evidence that there's a long-term benefit to leaving other foreign material there as opposed to putting back what was naturally there. Nor, by the way, so we don't lose track of this, do I think it's appropriate to be laying this material on top of good topsoil when there is more than a few inches of topsoil with the expectation of being able to peel that back off, because, you just don't do this with a tablespoon. You're out there doing it with scrapers and motor graders and such, and every time you work this volume of soil around, there's going to be losses, and to think you're going to scrape the aggregate and this material off of there and get it pretty much all and not take some topsoil is also a mistake. It just seems to me that the best practice is to strip the topsoil and then put down your other material, and then when you're done, pick up the other material, put the topsoil back.
If I could, I don't think that they intend to remove this material. I think they intend to mix it into the topsoil. It's a 6% mixture into the topsoil. Mm-hmm. And so over the 30 years or so that it sits there, it'll, I think, decompose into the topsoil too. And so when they take it off, they will just take the gravel off that they put over the top of this stuff and leave this stuff down there.
Can you help me out a little bit, Jerry? Because that 6% keeps nagging at me. Let's say there are 6 inches of topsoil and they're going to put several inches of this down, or there's a foot of topsoil maybe in a low area. How do you come up with 6, or is that just a general average of 6%?
I would interpret it as a general average, but I would say it goes into the top, I don't know how deep.
So it's not very precise at all to say 6% is going to be mixed in. It might be a lot more on a hilltop where there isn't as much topsoil, certainly higher than 6%.
I would think it could vary. I'm just guessing on, because I've never done road construction either, but I think it would vary from area to area, but overall it would be 94% dirt and 6% of this stuff mixed into it. And so this stuff would kind of harden up there and make a subbase for the gravel that you're putting down.
My challenge on all of this, we're entering, I have more questions, frankly, than answers. This generates more questions for me, and then I look at what's happening with the lignite industry, and Commissioner Chrisman referenced that several times, and it works. The soil is returned to a very productive state. Well, farmers, producers in the area want to get their hands on it, and I realize some of this will go back into grass. It's not just all tillable, but there's a formula that works, and it seems to work very well from a productivity standpoint. This really jumps into the unknown. Will it work as well? And I have more questions right now than answers from the material provided.
Well, it's in the essence of time. It sounds like the two of you aren't likely to allow for the anything less than the 100% removal of the topsoil. So I think we should just make a decision on that. We got to stick with what's in the certification document on that. And I do think it's pretty clear in there that they have to remove all of it. But quite honestly, I can't imagine these wind farms starting to stockpile this soil. We know they haven't been doing that. I mean, have you ever seen a stockpile of soil anyplace on a wind farm? So this is not, they have not been stockpiling in the past. And I think that that just creates a whole, where, you know, they have to find land to stockpile it on and get the producers to take out more land. I just don't think that that's the right way to go on this issue. I'd like to see us let them spread the topsoil and the subsoil, take it all, and spread it adjacent to where it's being removed. Because I think for every argument you make for stockpiling it, you could have an argument against stockpiling it. So I just think in the end...
Well, that does make sense to me, having it adjacent, because that, you know, the depth's going to vary, but you would expect then when they're putting it back that it's very proportionate in terms of knowing, I mean, what's there was, in theory, should be, what was there prior, so that would go back in. It seems like it's better for soil health than just leaving it. How long does the topsoil sit in a... when they're mining, how long is that? I mean, a couple years or less? Or?
Several years to 30, 40 years.
But again, the quantity is significant compared to, like Jerry and said, they're not going to spread that around someplace.
Well, I think what I've heard is that it ends up being a practical, that you got to do that because there's... It just wouldn't be practical to spread it. I know Dean can tell me if I'm wrong, but they say that it's a compromise in the mining industry that they stack it like that. The ideal practice would be to spread it so that they could have the roots growing down into it better. And
Dean, what's your thought on that?
What your vegetation is, I don't know.
Well, the mines do prefer to direct respread when they can, but that requires that they have areas ready to respread. There's always areas where they don't have it, and they have to stockpile. And it's primarily a cost why they like to direct respread. You don't have to double handle the material, place it in the stockpile, take it off, but there is times, you know, we have millions of yards of topsoil stockpiles. When they're in a new mine area, they have to stockpile. When roads, they have to stockpile because there's not an adjacent area that they can respread with that material.
Before we move on, I wanted to get Dean's thoughts on the part about the losing the nutrient matter and such out of the stockpiled topsoil that Jerry talked about earlier. Does that come back, or do you have to put a lot of fertilizers and such into it in order to redevelop that? Or what have we found when it has been stockpiled for some years?
When it's been stockpiled for some time, it does go into this anaerobic condition in which the microbial activity ceases or declines. The nitrogen-fixing bacteria, those sorts of things. That activity declines. The more anaerobic it gets, the bigger the stockpile, the center portion. But once it's respread, the first year or two, it takes some time for that microbial action to come back, but it does come back. Generally, within a couple of years, it's back to the potential that it was prior to, you know, being stockpiled.
Dean, are there seed mixture changes and stuff like that that go through that initial period to try and reef?
Some of the mines go directly into cropping of these respread soils. Some go, plant a grass legume mixture on there. Of course, the legumes will add nitrogen, and but they don't. There was some research done years ago that where they added nitrogen-fixing bacteria to the soil or some type of a bacterial component, and it was relatively ineffective. Mother Nature took care of it on its own.
I'd just like to ask before we get past this topic, when you talk about the direct respread in the mining industry, if that's possible, are you talking temporary or are you talking permanent? And oh, then no. Different topsoil is going.
No, that's permanent.
Permanent.
It's
not a storage.
We discourage rehandling of material as much as possible. There's sometimes when it's inevitable, but for the most part, because every time you handle it, there's losses, as Randy indicated, there's losses associated with it. There's compaction, recompaction. Every time you handle it, there's a loss.
So you don't think that this notion that you can respread it and then gather it up again and use it is
accurate? I mean, it's possible, but bear in mind you're gonna there's some losses associated with that.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And then all the area where you have respread it has to be reseeded, as well as the areas where you respread it too. As opposed to taking it off a pile and then you just have the new area to come.
Like I say, in the mines, we discourage the rehandling of the topsoil as much as possible. Meaning where they had an area that direct respread, and there's instances where they have to go back and fix some drainage problems or something. In those instances, it's allowable, but just discourage it as much as possible. Versus if it's stockpiled, of course it's being rehandled, but at some point stockpiling is inevitable as well.
Dean, are you familiar with roads at all? Do they do a cement substrate on the...
Not that I'm aware that the mines have used any cement. They've generally, the roads on the mines are built from either subsoil. And they're raised, the roads that are built on the mines. They're a raised surface with drainage control, and they're either built from all the topsoil is removed, they're built from subsoil or overburden. And they experiment with different, each mine uses probably different soil stabilization measures. Usually it's some type of a polymer or lignin-type product, and it's primarily for dust control that's incorporated in the top surface. And then when reclamation on overburden roads, that material is removed. It's hauled. It's used to backfill the final pit or pit, and then subsoil and topsoil is brought back. If it's constructed of subsoil, the upper 6 inches to a foot is removed. That's gravel, it's so heavily compacted, that goes to the pit, and then the subsoil is spread out into the ditches, and if needed, more subsoil is brought in to raise it to the proper grade, and then topsoil over that.
Thanks.
Jerry, on the third page of this, the charts, the disturbance miles and such.
Yeah.
WTG is wind turbine
generator.
Okay. So the complete disturbance on these over the years has averaged not a lot less, but less than 1 acre per turbine, right?
Yeah.
And so if we were talking about an average of 6 inches of topsoil on a 50 turbine wind farm, you would be talking about, if you put it all in one stockpile, which would seem unlikely because you'd be hauling it so far, you would have a potentially a 1 acre stockpile 25 feet high. So if you put it on say, four areas, you would potentially have four 1-acre tracts about 6-7 feet high and reseed it. My point is, we're not talking about huge acreage of stockpiles if you chose to stockpile it that you would have to acquire. Is my math getting off a digit or something?
Yeah, I'd have to do that myself to figure out. I guess there's no requirement in the existing orders that they do that anywhere, so we would have to make that a requirement going forward or something.
And that is a good point. And so get me back on to exactly what the question is on with this particular certification order, because I'm going to be probably working on some ideas for future ones, I'll tell you that.
They weren't asking about the stockpiling. I think that just kind of grew out of our discussions, if I'm remembering this right.
Mm-hmm. Is the question here whether they have to take more than how much topsoil they want to peel off and leave the rest, or did it have to do with leaving the cement-stabilized subgrade there?
When they did the roads, they wanted to go down 4 inches. If there were more than 4 inches of topsoil, they would leave that there. And then they want to put down this stabilization mixture into the underneath the 4 inches that they took off. And then they want to put sand over the top, or gravel over the top of that. And then the road would be done.
Their request is very specifically spelled out in their April 2nd letter, I think, where they want to modify the certification document. And they've proposed language and everything.
The underlined language.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
That's really the only question based on this particular work session and this project. And
I think so. Right. That's what they've asked anyway, so...
Commissioner?
Lana?
I just wanted to mention, we're kind of getting to the end, that there's a substantial additional information from this discussion that was not provided anywhere but at this table. You know, the late filed exhibit is one thing that everyone knew was coming in, but then we have factual discussion going on from Jerry and Dean, and some from commissioners perhaps. So I want to be sure that that is made a part of the record, if the commission would like to do that, and also that the company then has an opportunity to reply or respond or object, which you don't have to give them today at a work session, but you would want some time then, you know, for them to comment about whether they have any problem with that or they want to ask some questions directly, perhaps a short informal, you know, to do that of Dean or of Jerry. And also that the notice period hasn't run yet, correct, Jerry?
I think it was May 5th or 6th.
Yeah, so it's... Yeah.
So there's some time on the notice period before we could do any decision anyway.
Exactly, yeah.
And... Well, I think it's appropriate to ask Molly if that would be within that time period that we have to wait anyway in the comment period, whether that would be adequate time to respond to what she's heard here today.
That's fine.
Did we record those?
I think we record them all, yes.
Okay. So, Molly, I'm just guessing that you will want to respond or at least have that option open. And assuming that May 5th timeline is correct, that's how long we're open for public comment. Is that adequate time for you to respond, or would you like additional time, or what? I know it's the company is wanting, I think, a quicker resolution than slower. So the question for you, Molly.
I will say I'll have to go back to the company just to confirm anything that I say here, but I would say that you're correct. We would like a decision, you know, as soon as we can. So we would try to respond within that time period that's left in the process.
Okay. And frankly, it's a good thing because it gives us a chance to look at what came in last night more thoroughly than what was possible by this morning.
And I think if one thing I was, we circled back to the key issue that we have in this informal, and I just wanted to make sure I understood the comments that came from the discussion from Dean and Jerry. And I'm sorry, Dean, I don't think that I've had an opportunity to meet you, so trying to figure out who is saying what. So is there some way to summarize just those couple of comments that came out that, yeah, that you're thinking that we should respond to?
I have a suggestion, Molly, and that is that this recording will be posted in the docket, and just listen to it.
Okay. and we will just focus then on our the road modification request that we've made, and that's,
yeah,
that's,
and
I think so, because most of this, not necessarily most of it, but certainly a lot of it, probably mostly because of me, has strayed off into some of these other subjects that I have found alarming but don't really have to do with your request. And so in order to give you and the company a as quick as possible response, yes, I think we should just focus on your question as far as leaving the topsoil.
Okay.
And one other thing, Dean Mose is our director of our reclamation division. Did I get your title right, Dean?
And AML.
And AML, Abandoned Mine Lands program. So he's our expert on it.
And he's a soil expert.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. Nice to meet you, Dean.
Likewise.
So should we set an informal or a work session for after that, or might it be clear enough that we can just visit with staff and make a decision? I'm guessing we'll need to have some kind of a discussion.
I think you'll have to have some kind of discussion, but I was, what type? It depends on what the company responds, but we don't want a situation where they have a response, then staff feels they need to ask them more questions, or the commission does, and then we do that one-sided, and then somebody needs to respond. So depending on their response, it might be a little mini-informal where there could be direct question without delay and calling and writing, is what I'm thinking, depending on their response.
Lana, would it be possible for that to be by telephone, just given that we've flown in once? I think that may be a concern. Would that be possible?
It is certainly fine with me.
And we have one on the calendar next Wednesday at the 25th. I don't see anything that is already scheduled for that informal time. So, you know, there's apparently time available on the 25th, if that time frame works for you guys.
I will check with the company on that, but thank you.
So
both your attorneys will be gone on the 25th, if you care. Not that we have to be there, but
yeah.
Just letting you know.
So, you know, I really don't think it's necessarily a real tough legal issue on this question.
It's okay with me.
Building of future guidelines and certification documents might be, but if that's the best opportunity, thank you, though.
Okay.
So we'll try to put it on the 25th, and Molly can participate by phone.
Yep, I'm
assuming they can respond then and give us a little bit of time to look through it.
Okay. Otherwise, the next one would be like 2 weeks later, right?
Yeah, and I think there might be something scheduled for that one already.
And it doesn't fall on a Wednesday.
Yeah, that's my problem. It's the 8th, I bet. No? When is it? 11th? Did we go 3 weeks?
We went 3 weeks there. The next one is the 15th.
Of May?
Yeah, and I don't know if there's an informal schedule that
there
day
is.
Or not.
That's out there a ways, too, isn't it?
That's the NSB reliability performance bonus.
But it doesn't mean we can't have an informal on a different day than
true.
Yeah.
Than an afternoon of our regular meetings. But I'm going to tell you this, Molly, because I'm going from memory, but I was looking up for something else that I needed to schedule earlier this morning. Between several conferences that are going on, those weeks, once you get between like May 7th and May 24th, are just a scheduling disaster. So I know whatever date that was that Jerry said that it's open for opportunities for public comment is even tight enough, but if we're able to do it more quickly, it would give us a better chance of doing it without waiting for till the end of May even.
Yeah, that would be our preference as well. Thank you. Okay. We will try to do that.
Okay. Anything else for today? Okay. Thank you, everyone.
All right.